It's Darren Winston's book report. Hi, Darren.
Hey, Jill. How are you?
All right, so you have another story. I love this is sort of like
Tales from the Crypt.
I was thinking more of a show. But that's all right. We'll go with Crypt. Tales from the Crypt from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I was thinking more, was it EC Comics? Is that the original Tales from the Crypt?
BC, wasn't it?
No, EC. I can't remember the story. I just read a book about the birth of Mad Magazine, and Mad Magazine came out of EC Comics, which maybe was owned by William Gaines' dad. William Gaines was the original publisher.
Is that where Tales from the Crypt came from?
Yeah, that was the uber gory comics from the 40s and early 50s.
I still remember my two favorite Mad Magazine panels to this day. And one was, I think they were probably both written by William Gaines.
Right.
There are three. One was the minute after that 1 minute TV commercial where, you see the dog diving for the kibble and the kibble flying everywhere. And then the minute after you see the giant T-bone that they've pulled out, the dog's pulled out from the bottom.
Right.
And again, speaking of timeless, to this day. And the other was a series of cars at the time and how dangerous they could be if people were walking by and getting impaled on fins.
Right.
And it's,
as you said, pretty timeless stuff. I mean, completely ridiculous and infantile, but that's why. And it was so well done. The people who, largely men at the time, advertising guys and artists, like sort of comic book artists, but the whole thing was raised to an unbelievable level of quality, which is why it worked and why what's like 60-something years later it's still going.
And also why they're now making series, I'm thinking of Mad, but why these things are being celebrated, in quotes, in an historical context in a TV show so that other people can know, in a serialized TV, so that other people can know what it was like. And yet, because this I just love, there are, while it's being presented almost as, wow, this is something that happened, there are still people doing such amazing work in advertising, completely worthy of.
Oh, totally.
And you look at those and you go, perfect. Pitch. It's like writing music. It's like any living,
organic.
Yeah, but what's the word I'm looking for?
Rutabaga.
No, I think it more has to do with talent or a field.
Right.
Being
at the top of your game,
despite the way things are sort of presented as well, it's totally throwaway, it's mass-produced, doesn't matter, you can click, there must be an app for it. In fact, there's a whole universe that there isn't an app for. There's that, you can't press creative, it's like, okay, I've...
No, exactly, but to that same point, I wonder if the Mad Magazine of our youth was the sort of Jon Stewart of our youth. I mean, who else was making such great fun of popular culture and politics and totally getting away with it because it was couched as being for kids, whereas adults were reading it all along, still read it because it was and is clever.
I think in every generation, to that point, I think every generation has its own version of that. That could well be, but.
So back to Tales from the Crypt.
Right.
So I don't always just steal in books in my shop. I things that are terribly interesting come across my desk and I decide that they sort of can join my world. And one of the things is this pair of what I was referring to for the last several years as sort of coconut shells. These two carved half shells, they turns out they're not coconuts. They are calabash gourds and they're about 10 inches wide, but imagine a globe, cutting it in half, and that's what I've got, two halves. And why they were intriguing and why they're still intriguing is one of them was carved with a relief of Queen Victoria, and the other was carved with a relief of some heavily bearded man, but his name was part of the inscription, and obviously Victoria's was part of hers. So we were able to tell straight away who this guy was, and he was some sort of colonial governor in the late 19th century in Africa for Victoria. And so it wasn't that difficult to deduce who he was and what he was doing. But one of the fun things about this kind of work, just like the book we talked about in an earlier show, is finding out exactly when it's from. So we went to the Queen Victoria Gourd, and there was some Latin writing around her head. And we had the image that was carved. And again, I have to give all the credit to my crack assistant. She was able to figure out that the image was lifted almost entirely from a coin that was minted in the British Empire over a 3-year period. And I want to say it was like 1887 to 1890. We'll just pretend that that's true. And everything in it was right. There was her earrings, her necklace, the shoulders of her dress, everything fit that period. And then we found out that this particular governor was, he had one post from, let's say, 87 to 91, or even, sorry, early, 1880 to 1881, and then again from like 1895 to 10 years later, something like that, or 85 to 95. So we had this short window for her, but we found out that in that window, he was knighted. He received his knighthood in, I believe it was 1887. 1887 was also Queen Victoria's 60th anniversary of being on the throne. I can't remember if that it has a medal attached to it.
Diamond Jubilee.
It
would have been her Diamond Jubilee, but, which is not exactly a medal, but...
it's an achievement.
It's totally an achievement. And the other thing that goes with that is that that was a period of time when she was, by and large, in seclusion, living.
Right, right. Her and her tiny crown and her black clothes. And so if you imagine, we've got our notes and we've got this wide swath. She's born in 1837. She dies in, I think, 1901. We've got his life and death dates. We have his ranks. We know when he's made, when he's knighted. So it's getting smaller and smaller.
The coin was minted.
Exactly. We know when the coin was minted. So in the case of the coin, all that can tell us is it had to have been done after 1887. It could have been done last week, but it had to be done after 87.
Yeah, but the whole thing.
But then he dies. So that's an end date as well. So we squeeze it down. We knew that he was knighted because... I think that the gourd was inscribed something like Sir W.M. something Griffith, and then I want to say it was K.C.M.G., which I think is something like Knight of St. Christopher and St. Michael of the Garter. It's this long, complicated thing, but so we've got his knighthood. And then, interestingly, on his gourd... there's a soldier carved to the side. So if you imagine his head is not quite life-size, but near enough, there's a sort of 6-inch soldier standing next to him that, despite the kind of folk art craft of the carving, he's clearly not a white English soldier. He is a native of some sort. So now we know where he is. So we look up military uniforms for that country at that time, and lo and behold, there's pictures of these guys with these very distinctive hats, these strange berets with very long tassels, almost cartoonish. That's what the guy has. So, again, we've narrowed it down. Well, it's got to be before he took this other posting, and maybe it was done. The sort of silly thing is maybe it was done as this cheap boardwalk purchase at the time. Yes, we're celebrating the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, the knighthood of our governor. But again, once you start looking and digging, another thing is we kept calling it a coconut shell. We knew that it absolutely wasn't a coconut, but what other shell was that big? You know, when you looked on the verso, on the back of it, it had lines in it like you would see on an orange that was peeled, and you see the segments. So it had to be a segmented fruit, some sort of a melon perhaps. I didn't make the calabash discovery. Crack assistant did.
You didn't go for the gourd.
But it was so obvious when we found, other carved calabash gourds. They look just like ours. Now they have other things on them. So, and this, again, was a process. I bought those 5 or 6 years ago. And in a purchase with lots and lots of books, couldn't resist. And I remember at the time I called a colleague of mine, and I said, there's some other interesting stuff here. You should come look at this, which is what we often do. It was stuff I couldn't use, but I wanted to make the recommendation to the homeowner and help a friend. And in the case of these gourds, I said, look, I'm going to buy these. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. They're partly your interest. Let's just let's do it together. Let's sort of take the dive together. So we came up with a price and it was accepted, or it might have even been told to us. I can't remember, but we bought them and it was left to me to figure out what they were. And they sat in various boxes, wrapped in tissue. And then for years, you know, they were so well wrapped, I didn't even know what the heck was under
inside,
it.
Right.
And then the fun thing was, you know, I go back into my office occasionally and I think, okay, it's time to solve some mysteries. What's it going to be? And I'll pull things off the shelves and I'll think, okay, I know enough to continue, or something I look at and I think, oh, no, I'm not ready yet. It's still too vague.
It's too soon. So this is better than Tales from the Crypt. Every X you could turn up with another solved, you know, historical, this is where it came from.
It's
called provenance, but...
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's great fun, but for every time... The great Calabash Gourd mystery of 2016 is solved, I will learn something that my hunch was right, that something turned out to be nothing, or despite something, this is a fascinating plague that I think lots of other, not only booksellers, but people in the similar trades go through, is when you're on a house call, when you're in the field, when you have to make decisions and spend money and everything sort of has to happen in one go, you just make ridiculous decisions that you can't believe when you get home and you unwrap it, what was I thinking? I remember once years ago going on this crazy house call with a friend of mine to this very sweet but really kind of crazy man, and he had been widowed, and I guess he had books. I say that because I have no memory of books. I just have memory of stuff. He had lots of strange cookie jars, and he lived in this tiny house somewhere in Westchester, and he kept talking about his wife in this kind of Norman Batesian way where we weren't sure if she existed, we weren't sure if she was alive, and then he brought us upstairs to the second level of the house.
Shower?
No, thankfully, not a shower. And he sort of opened this door, and he said, gentlemen, and he kind of introduced his wife, but not as though she was going to appear, but that we were going to see something. And we were in this attic that was finished enough to stand in, that had rack after rack after rack after rack of clothing, all that this lady had made. She had, in fact, died. And he had kept all this stuff because he obviously loved her dearly, and it meant something, and perhaps he didn't know what to do with it. So that's sort of an aside to this crazy visit. I mean, that was it, because literally we looked at each other like, are we ever going to leave this attic, or are we going to leave the second floor of this little house? But we bought some stuff, and then we got back to our apartments or whatever. We were living in the city at the time and going through the stuff. And I remember my colleague pulling this little sort of compact out that at the time, with the rose-tinted glasses of whatever we were wearing.
Survival.
Right. Thought was this amazing Art Deco compact made out of all these interesting materials. In the cold light of day, it was like this hideous fake Art Deco compact that came from like a love store in Manhattan the week before. And it wasn't a question of losing lots of money. It was more like, what was I thinking? I was smart enough to have bought what I did, but this somehow slipped through, and you know, I just didn't see it coming. But again, that's the great fun. You make the great discoveries, and then you can laugh about what you got wrong.
It's Darren Winston's book report.
Thanks, Jill.